to AWARE. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the AWARE Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. Great to be with you guys today. All right, so today I have two extraordinary people joining me on the AWARE Show. So fasten your seatbelts. We're going to another dimension on today's show. And this excites me because this is a conversation that I have been toying around with in my personal life for a while. So my first guest, she fought cancer for almost 4 years before her body's systems just began to completely shut down. And I know this type of cancer is fatal. It's typically fatal because we lost my husband's grandmother to lymphoma. So the fact that Anita Morjani actually is here today to talk about her experience of living through this, and not only living through the cancer, but traveling to another dimension, also known as a near-death experience in the classic sense of the definition. But she is here to tell us what she has learned. And she is also joined by Dr. Wayne Dyer, one of my favorite people on the planet, I will tell you. And Wayne has brought Anita up on his stage to talk about her experience and her and his own experiences and how they relate to everything. And he's got a new book out called Wishes Fulfilled, big PBS special out this month, brand new. Welcome both of you to the show. Thanks for being with me.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Yay! I'm excited because it's always amazing to me. Here I am on the air talking about near-death experiences. Last week I interviewed Raymond Moody who wrote the classic, he was on my Denver show and in Colorado, the Guyam show, and to have him sit there, it's just an icon that wrote this definition of near-death experience, and having been through that experience myself, I got to go through this journey with him. So I'm excited about doing this today. It's great because anyone out there who has had this experience of leaving this plane, this dimension, this reality, this consciousness, and exiting into another reality knows exactly what we're talking about. So, Anita, I'm going to start with your experience. As you began to give way to the cancer, what were you experiencing at that time?
Oh, wow. It was like a release. It was like incredible bliss. Hmm. I mean, at this point, I was, my organs had started to fail, and I was connected to tubes. I was connected to oxygen. My body was completely wasted away, and I went into a coma. So my family, I was at home. I was actually suffering the last days of my cancer at home. And then when I went into a coma, my family called the doctor and they said to rush me to the hospital. And at the hospital, they told my family that this was the end and that now my organs had shut down. And my body, well, first of all, my physical body started to swell up because of the toxic buildup within the body because the organs had shut down. And so I had these open skin lesions and I was in like really bad shape. But what nobody realized was that I was aware of everything that was going on around me. And all I felt was incredible, peaceful bliss. And it was like I was surrounded by this unconditional love. And
were you aware of the pain at the same time, or was that not in the awareness that we're talking about right now?
No, the pain was gone, completely gone.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I didn't even feel my body anymore. My body was almost insignificant compared to what I was then feeling in that realm. I felt expanded, like I continued to kind of expand and take over all the space in the room and beyond. And I was aware of conversations that were going on beyond the room, like between my doctor and my husband and my family outside, like down the hallway, down the corridor. And I wasn't even aware that I was in a coma. It was almost like it felt normal to be in that state. It was like I had awoken finally.
Isn't it interesting that we look at our bodies, sometimes we think our body is everything, and it is what houses our consciousness, but it's actually not. Our bodies are amazing, and the way that God designed them is amazing, and how they have these innate abilities to achieve homeostasis, and all that is incredible, but where our consciousness really lies is outside of this carcass that we walk around in. And I know, Wayne, that you've had that same realization as well, right? That it's not all about the actual body, right?
Oh, absolutely. That the consciousness, I mean, they're now doing scientific experiments validating. I mean, Rupert Sheldrake has done a lot of work on that. I don't know if you've had Rupert on your show.
Yes.
And he talks about morphogenetic fields, and we think that our thoughts originate inside of our brain, and then we just discover that even without the brain, certain kinds of thoughts are existing, and that we're really connecting to something that transcends the body. And also, there's this awareness that who we are is really not these bodies. You don't have to have a near-death experience to experience that. I'm 71 years old. I know I was in a 20-year-old body at one time. I mean, but I can't find one cell left of it. I mean, it's nowhere to be found.
Uh-huh.
I was in a 30-year-old body and a 10-year-old body, and the I that I am just keeps occupying newer bodies. But the I that I am is invisible, it's formless, it's boundaryless, it's our spirit, and that is the part that I think Anita is speaking about here, that's where she was living. And the body was just something she had to decide whether to go back into or not. And it's so fascinating what she saw when she was there. She actually saw her body being healed. She looked into the future, saw new medical records showing that she no longer had cancer. And then when she came back and they were kept looking for the cancer, she kept saying to them in her astonished way, or in her bewildered state, what are you looking for? I already know I don't have cancer.
Do you think that was a foreshadowing for you, Anita, or do you think that was a projection or a prediction?
It's actually quite hard to answer that question. I'll tell you why. Because in that other realm, time doesn't exist, or at least not in the way we know it here.
True.
Time doesn't run linear. The physical body seems to limit time to running linear, like one point of time after another, like we link the points of time together to make it linear. So in that realm, it felt like I was watching it unfold then and there, that there were these options, that there was the option of my body dying and the medical records showing that I actually saw them, the doctor coming in and presenting to my family that cause of death was due to organ failure from end-stage lymphoma. And then there was this other scenario that was unfolding, and it was unfolding simultaneously. Both were simultaneous.
Wow.
The other scenario was the doctors coming in and saying, good news, she's healed. Yeah, and it wasn't that quick. Good news, her organs are starting to function again. Now, what's interesting is they took the tests. Before that, the tests were already taken. The results hadn't come out yet. So both of these scenarios were running simultaneously. So it wasn't even like it was a future scenario. They were running simultaneously, and I had the choice as to which one if I chose to go back into my body, the doctors would walk in and say, her organs are starting to function again. If I chose to go into death and not go into my body, it would have been the other.
Was there a specific thing that you needed or that happened that allowed you to choose coming back?
A couple of things happened. First was, I encountered my father and also my best friend, but my father impressed upon me that it wasn't my time yet, and that I should actually go back. But I didn't want to come back because my body was dying, and apart from the fact that my body was completely dying and suffering, and my family was suffering because I was ill. Apart from that, that state was so incredibly blissful and peaceful and amazing. It's just so hard to leave that state.
Yes, that is interesting, because that's consistently what Raymond Moody had heard from. He has interviewed thousands of people who have had near-death experiences, and consistently there are a set of maybe seven or eight things that we all consistently say that have been in this realm or this experience, and that is one of them, that it really softens the fear of death, if anything, gets rid of it completely, because it is such an easy state. It is actually an easier place than I've ever experienced. That's an interesting word. I have never used the word easy before. Interesting.
Well, Anita said on an interview I just saw her do in London that, and also on my PBS show, she said it's, I can understand why a lot of people who have cancer don't come back. She said, because she said it was very, very difficult. Wasn't it, Anita, that it would have been so easy for you not to come back.
That's interesting.
That was actually the easier choice. And I did a speaking event 2 days ago where one of the questions somebody asked me at the Q&A at the end said, why is it that you were able to come back and other people get cancer and they don't?
Mm.
And he took it that I was blessed to come back. And I actually said, maybe I'm not the one that's blessed, and the people you know who didn't come back are the ones that are blessed.
Interesting. Interesting, of course, of course.
Yeah.
We have spoken.
You were there too, though. I know, Lisa, that you had an experience like this too when you were younger, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely. And it was, I mean, it was 1999, and it was a very pinnacle. It was a significant event in my life, because as I left my body and I looked down below to see the chaos that was happening and I felt and heard all of the consciousness of what was going on in the EMTs around my body, and I went immediately to Asia and to back. It was the most expansiveness I have ever experienced. But coming back, I realized that the old games and the old patterns that I had been running as a reaction from my childhood, acting out my childhood stuff, was no longer necessary. Because there is such another dimension, there is such a different space that this is all leading up to. So it changed the entire direction of my life, and I'm sure that the same thing happened with you, Anita.
Oh gosh, absolutely. My life is completely different. I mean, I think even Wayne discovering my story, it's just so much a part of what was supposed to happen. It's part of the unfolding of this whole new life. It's all like, everything feels so much more guided and on purpose. And even Wayne and I connecting is so much a part of that purpose. I cannot tell you what a blessing it's been to have Wayne as a mentor to go in this direction.
Yes, he's an amazing man. And they're both, Anita Morjani has a new book out called Dying to Be Me, and Wayne Dyer has a new book out called Wishes Fulfilled. And that in your PBS special, in the special, you talk about your experience, Wayne, with this, well, with past life regression. And it's kind of a similar, now here we are having this conversation about parallel universes, and this is where I really want to go with you guys. I want to talk about this. How do we use this concept of multidimensional reality in a practical sense? How do you use it now in your life? How are you both using it now in your life? How does it help you with where we're going as a community of beings?
Well, I think I'll just respond first, but I think Anita really gave me the idea on this. Her story was brought to me by a woman, her name is Mira Kelly, who is also a past life regression therapist and very, very expert in the area, is writing a book about it, and has studied with Brian Weiss, and she's also an attorney, and has left that whole legal world behind and is now doing this full time. But she brought Anita's story to me, and in the process of bringing it to me, she also had me do a past life regression. I had had experiences with past life regression. I've known Brian Weiss for many, many years.
Right,
right. Very, very good friends. So we've traveled all over the world together. We've spoken in Rome together, in Australia together, just the past year, and on many, many venues. A lovely guy, a terrific guy, really. And we've had a lot of discussions about it. But the truth of it is, I never really had any real experience with it, and I was never, you know. I've had, I wrote about in Wishes Fulfilled about that there have been people that have been extremely influential in my life, like St. Francis was one, Lao Tzu was another. Mm-hmm. I wrote books about their teachings. I have pictures of them or drawings of them in my writing space, and it feels as if they're right there with me in the process of, you know, when I'm writing. And I've had past life regressions where I thought, well, maybe I was St. Francis in another life, or maybe I was Lao Tzu in another life. And then I talked to Anita about it, and she said, that's just your ego. and the fact of it is that you can be St. Francis right now, here, right there in this moment. And if there is, you know, even quantum physics says there's no such thing as time. And if there's no such thing as time, I mean, if time doesn't exist, if there's just one great big oneness, then there's no past, and there is no future, that it's all now, it's all one. And when I talked to Anita about, when I read her story, I had this real strong sense that that the people that have been extremely influential in my life, who really turned my life around, and as a consequence, I've turned millions of people's lives around,
mm-hmm.
were these people who literally became me. Right now, not 500 years ago, not 2,500 years ago, but right in this moment. And I think Anita can speak really beautifully to this point because she said, it's just, there is no past. Everything you place your attention on at this higher enlightened state of awareness is you become. You can become. Is that right, Anita?
That's absolutely right, because when I was in my NDE state, when I was no longer expressing from my physical body, which is the limited expression, I felt I became everybody and everything, everybody that was around me.
Hmm.
I actually became them. I knew every emotion my husband was feeling, my mother, but not just them, but also the doctors and the nurses that were treating me, everybody that was around. I could feel their frenzy. I could feel even some of them in resignation, knowing that I was just going to die in a few hours anyway. I could sense that. And it was like I became them. And so this leads me to believe that when we're not expressing through our bodies, we're all one. We're all connected anyway. And because there's no time in the other realm, because I perceived what I would have probably interpreted as past lives if somebody was telling me the story, of past lives that I have lived, but in that realm, it didn't feel like past lives. It felt like those lives were running simultaneously, like right now, and those lives were running at the same time as the other, supposedly the probabilities of whether I was going to die or whether I was going to come back into my body, and also the past life scenarios. It was like everything was happening simultaneously. So this is why now I know, as I'm here in this physical world right now in this body, I know that at my consciousness level, when I can access that level, it can actually still become anything.
And the interesting thing, Anita, is that you can access that NDE state right now. I saw you do it with our friend Debbie Ford, whom I think you know as well.
Really?
Yes. And Debbie has been telling, she's writing a book about this, so this isn't anything that I'm taking out of, you know, out of confidentiality.
Uh-huh.
I just wrote the foreword to her book, in fact. And we were together, with John of God and had a healing, a simultaneous kind of healing together up in New York. But, I brought, Anita to Los Angeles and to Pasadena recently when she appeared when we did the taping for the PBS show, and we went up into Debbie's hotel room, and I watched Anita. You're talking about what can you do with this information. I watched Anita go into that state, and I had to quiet Debbie down to get her to stop talking, and I watched like miraculous thing taking place as Anita worked with Debbie to help her in her healing.
Interesting. So you can actually go back and access that state. That
yeah.
is amazing. And from that place...
She's done it for me before I speak. I mean, not twice. I've had her just come in, and when I was a bit anxious, there was stuff going on in my life, stuff with family and all of that, and she just brought a sense of calm and so on, and even before I did the public television special, as nervous as Anita was...
Right, she got
before
to...
we went on, she came, and she really induced that state and was able to put me into that state as well, and it's an amazing state to be able to go into. And that's what she, right, that's why her book is so incredible and why everybody, if you read all the reviews of it on Amazon, I mean, people are just saying it is the most stupendous and important book I've ever read and everyone in the world needs to read it.
Yes. And so, Anita, what is that like when you go into that state? Is it a choice? Is it an intention? Is it a practice that you get better at as you do more? Explain that.
Okay. It's interesting because it's actually the opposite of focusing or choosing. It's almost like a release, like a letting go, like a surrender. So, and then, so there's no goal or anything. It's like any sense of wanting to attain anything has to be released. Even, and this is the dichotomy, is that even the desire to attain that state has to be released. So it's literally in a state of total release and total surrender. And so then there's no attachment to anything physical, any outcome, or even the physical body. And then that, when I can, once I do that, which if I hadn't had the NDE, I wouldn't even know to do that. I wouldn't have known that that's the state that I'm looking for. But once I do that, when there is that full release, it feels as though I have access to the infinity, to the higher, the unlimited, to the potential, to the ambiguity. The minute you put limitations on it, any kind of limitation, even the limitation of this is the state I want, you're limiting the possibility. So it really means opening yourself up to absolutely anything. And when you open yourself up to anything with no expectation, you become available to everything, absolutely everything.
Okay, so let's talk about the things that knock you out of that space, like the concepts around organized religion or survivalistic behavior around the economy or a house that's going into foreclosure. How do you bridge?
All of those are fear. Everything that you've described is fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically, I think, the message of Anita's book, and it's certainly the message that I live. And, you know, it's like the Course in Miracles said, there's either fear or love. And everything that's love isn't fear, and everything that is fear cannot be love. So it's like we live in we are embracing a world of fear, Lisa. I mean, it is like it's broadcast on almost every news broadcast, every advertisement we read, everything, every conversation you hear. It's like, Anita grew up as a person who just drank in fear, literally about everything, including cancer. Her very best friend that she was so close to died of cancer, and sure enough, she began to develop the very thing that she was most afraid of. And it's like living fearlessly is where we have to go with it. I don't like to speak for you, Anita, but I mean, I've just read your book again, and I know that that's such an important theme.
Yes, there are so many people who are even raising their children with an enormous amount. They won't even let them walk 5 feet in front of them because they're afraid something's going to happen to them. And
well, you and I talked. I mean, on the phone just last week, just about something your beautiful daughter was going through. I mean, she was just afraid because she had wasn't accepted for something she had tried out for.
Right, she was rejected for something, yeah.
Yeah, those kinds of things. I mean, and we think that we're doing the best thing, but basically we're often telling them, you know, you're not good enough, or if you don't succeed and all of that, instead of telling people, that even our young children, telling them that you have nothing to be afraid of whatsoever. You are completely divinely loved at all moments. If you can live in that place. But I'm speaking for someone who's really been through it and lived a life of fear.
I heard Anita speak with you when you were here in Pasadena at the I Can Do It conference. And,
oh, that's right, yeah.
And I purchased the CD afterwards because I wanted to listen to what the two of you spoke about over and over again, because something that you two said about this concept of parallel universes, and I'm just taking that as just a phrase, but it's the entire concept that I have taken and incorporated into my daily life. And I wrote down what you had said, Anita, and it was so beautiful. You said, you were describing your experience, and you said, it's like God tapping you on the shoulder and saying, here's an example of the other side of expanded consciousness. Not to go back and live with this, knowing that and sharing it with people in your own way. This was a gift. And you said, I love you. Know you are expanded. Know you are guided. And those guides are here with you now. Those guides are here with you now. So those guides right here with us in this experience, in this time and space continuum we're living in right this second, Anita and Wayne, is that what you're talking about? That we're in this space right here, right now, but there's yet another one existing simultaneously, and another one, and another one, and they all have their own sets of guides and consciousness?
Well, yes-ish. this is where it gets complex, but it's almost like every scenario is already available to you. So, there's no wrong path. So what we always worry about is, I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to go down this route. I have to work really hard to get this right. But that is all the fear-based living. So getting it wrong, getting it right, or getting it in any other way, we have to kind of think all these possibilities all exist right now, and we don't have to beat ourselves up to get to the next level or the next stage of our life or whatever it is. It's almost like we have to surrender to the guidance. And I tend to use the word guidance more than specifically guides, because sometimes when I say guides, people want to know who the guides are. Guidance is more all-encompassing because it's more fluid. So it's like we're guided, and if we surrender to the guidance, and the complex part is we surrender to the guidance, but we don't necessarily give our power away, because our power is what makes us unique. It's what makes us who we are. And if your only purpose is to be who you are, you cannot fail. So you be who you are, and you surrender to the guidance to move you forward. So you don't have to then make goals and say, I've got to get this right, I've got to do it this way, because you can't get it wrong. And even if you get it supposedly wrong, it's still okay. There's nothing to beat yourself up about, because the other possibilities always exist alongside of you, always exist. And you can always move. You can shift from one possibility to the next all the time, because time doesn't run linear in the way that we are forced to believe, and we can still keep kind of moving for example, if I can give you a tangible example, it's like the way my cancer healed. I could have died and my family would have mourned me, or I had the possibility of coming back. Now, the time frame in which the cancer healed was not physically possible, and that's what stumped all the doctors, and that's what it says even in my medical report written by one of the oncologists, that they had never seen such a rapid rate of healing, because they cannot figure where did the cancer cells go, because my organs had shut down. So it didn't need to play out in linear time. That's kind of my point.
Interesting.
And I think that very often, because we are so fixed in our thinking and our belief of how time should run and in our expectations, that's what we actually get. But if we let go of that fixed belief and we're more able to step into the ambiguity, we can almost sometimes bypass that whole linear path to get from one point to the other.
Do you think that, Anita, that, like God plays such a big role in all of this, and in my book, I have a whole chapter on our highest self and this whole idea of that God is not something external to us, that basically it isn't even something that we're necessarily connected to, that we are literally altogether God, that God is what we are, but fear is the thing that keeps us from living a God-realized life. What was your experience of that? I know we've talked about it, but tell the audience.
All right. The fear actually keeps us, well, fear is what keeps us in the physical. And once we're able to let go of fear, we realize that we are actually God. And the fear is the block that keeps us rooted to the physical. And everything that we do every day when we're in fear, things like setting goals, even, I know that goals are very popular in Western culture and we feel that we won't get anything done if we don't set goals. But what ends up happening is we set goals and then we live in stress of trying to achieve those goals. And then we beat ourselves up when we don't make it or if someone else achieves the goals faster than us. All this stems from fear. It stems from constantly doing and constantly living in stress and feeling that we're not good enough. Whereas if we can let go of all of that and realize that all we have to do is be who we truly came here to be, that underneath who we truly are, our state of consciousness is a state of love. Who we are at our core is love, and God and love is synonymous. That's who we are at our core. We're love. Without our physical bodies, when we're in that state, in that consciousness state, who we are is love. And if who we are at our core is love, that means when we allow ourselves to be who we truly are, we're being love. How can we be anything else but love if that's who we are at our core?
I love what you have on the cover of your book. And by the way, my guest here is Anita Morjani. The phones are going crazy here because people are saying, who is that? Who's talking? It's Anita Morjani, MORJANI. Her new book is called Dying to Be Me. If you look up her name on YouTube, which Wayne Dyer is also with us, he told me to originally look her up there. I saw her story and it's so compelling. But the front of the book cover says, heaven is a state, not a place. And I remember, Wayne, do you remember when you were on one of my teleseminar calls and you talked about that we are all God? You and I spoke afterwards and it lit so many people up. They were thinking, gosh, how could we be God? What's he talking? Because the dogma that we have been raised with as a country, even outside of this, of course outside of this country, is that God is separate from us, that there is a God out there, that we are not the same, and that we could only strive to be as good as that God outside of
God,
us.
This is a God that you speak of that was created by us in our own images of our own ego. A God that is angry, a God that has the power to heal but withholds it, a God that demands you go to certain religious services, a God that demands that you pay indulgences to this church and will be happier for you and help you out if you provide money and so on, a God that judges, a God that has rage inside, a God that you should fear. When my children were at a private school at one time, I had to pull them out of the school because on the report cards it said, you should fear God. I mean,
wow.
Basically that's what it said right on the report when they brought it home. You are here to fear, to learn to fear God. So we've created this God in our own image, but it's not the God that Jesus speaks about and the God that I speak about in Wishes Fulfilled. I mean, Jesus said, God is love, as Anita just said, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in me. It's interesting. I just did an interview with Oprah Winfrey on her Sunday Soul service.
Oh, nice.
Two hours together.
Wow.
She said, Wayne, she said, you can't say that God is love. You just can't say it. You're going to get flack from all the people over that.
Feeling the fundamentalist coming up behind my back right now. Yes. Yes.
I said to her, I said, well, then why did Jesus say it? That is it not written? He said it. Here's a direct quote in the book of John. Is it not written in your laws that I have said you are God? Now, if he didn't mean it, why would he say that? You know, and why does it say in Psalms 82, you are all children of the Most High, you are all gods? It's there in the scriptures, but we have let ourselves be raised with the belief that who we are is limited, who we are is just ordinary, who we are needs to have something outside of ourselves, and the organized religions are the only ones who can give us access to this. And they've convinced everybody that the only way you can get access to come to know God consciously, directly, is through us, when in fact all you have to do is close your eyes and realize that who you are, your highest self, is indeed God.
But that has, it has been so ingrained in our scripture, in our wording, in our languaging, that God is somebody that you pray to, that is responsible for your outcome, that it's hard to separate. Honestly, I was raised as a Catholic, and I and I have that verbiage inside my subconscious mind. It's very, very difficult to break.
Your scriptures are loaded with references to that, and I write a lot about that in this new book. And it's interesting because the show has been airing all over the, and I say it right on PBS, it's been airing all over the South, and the reaction has been great, because the reason is because I just quote directly from what Jesus said. When they say, you know, Jesus does not want you to think, or the Bible does not want you to think that you are God, then my response back to those people was, on the air, was, then why did he say it? If he didn't mean it, why did he say it? Why did he say you are gods when he meant, or why did St. Paul said, have in you, in the book of Philippians, have in you the same mind as Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God. Why is that in there? Why don't they excise that out if they didn't want us to know that? But what we've done is we've been raised by these organizations and by ourselves and by our parents and all kinds of well-meaning people who believe that they're only ordinary and don't understand that we all have extraordinary consciousness within us. Anita is a perfect example. No one in the history of humanity has ever been at the end stage of cancer that this woman has had, come back, and 4 weeks later they can't find cancer in her body. 4 days later, her tumors had shrunk by 60%. And now 5 years later or 4 years later, she's as healthy and beautiful, and a message, giving us a message that you don't have to go around believing that who you are is inferior, that who you are is magnificent. And that's basically the message of Dying to Be Me. Trust in your magnificence. She says it over and over again. Anita, just tell them the story of the flashlight, because I think that's probably the best example of the flashlight in the warehouse. I mean, it's such a great metaphor that you came up with to teach people what's available to them if they get out of this fear mode about dying and everything else.
Yes, that's a lot of calls coming in. Okay, go ahead. Yes.
Okay. What it feels like, what it felt like having an NDE, it felt like we go through life with just one flashlight, one little beam of a flashlight. And when I was in the NDE state, it was as though someone had switched the lights on. And if you can imagine that you're in this huge warehouse where you can't even see the ends, it's so huge, you can't see the ends of the aisles or where the walls are or the ceiling. And the aisles are just lined up with so many things that you can't even imagine. Anything that you even imagine exists there somewhere. Anything and beyond, even things you can't imagine exist, things that you didn't even know existed, exist somewhere on the shelves. And now that the lights are on, you can actually see how much there is, which you never realized existed. But you have been there, inside that warehouse, your whole life, and you've been living your life by the light of the torch, by the light of one beam of a torch. And the warehouse lights have always been off your whole life. And therefore, you were leading your life just by the beam of one torch, and only what your torch flashed on were you aware existed. So you didn't know of anything beyond the beam of the torch. But when the warehouse lights go on, that's when you realize, oh my God, all these things exist simultaneously.
Mm. So it's
not like I have to do one and then finish it and do the other. It's like everything exists simultaneously.
So there's no to-do lists in heaven.
And it all exists, the bad stuff, the good stuff, the beautiful stuff, the ugly stuff. It all exists. It just all is. And there's no judgment in that realm. It's just all there. It just all is. And so even when I go back into my body and live life through the beam of one flashlight, and I'm still only seeing things through one flashlight, through the beam of one flashlight, I'm aware that there is so much that exists simultaneously, and that's what people need to know, that every possibility exists at the same time.
Well, let me ask you, how does that apply to you, Wayne? How did you know that the leukemia diagnosis that you were given is a part of your mission on this planet. I remember you saying that on my show. It's part of a mission on this planet.
Well, I've, part of what we're talking about here goes back to, you know, what is disease in the first place? And what is this thing that, you know, our bodies, I've used the analogy before of, you know, if you were to go out and cut your arm, which my son just did the other day when he was out surfing, and you cut your arm and you notice that what happens, let's say you came upon your arm, you know, you were a medical person from another planet, and you had our sort of our awareness of how things ought to be treated. You look at that cut that's on your arm, and it's got a scab on it, which is very ugly, all dried up and ugly. It's got pus around it. It's all bright red. It looks like, you know, you just look at that and you just take out your scalpel and say, look, we got to cut this thing away from you. This is a terrible thing that you have there on your arm. When in fact, all of that stuff that looks so terrible and that we call disease is really the body's way of healing. And so that leukemia is like that, and there are so many other diseases as well, that the body's way of cervical cancer and things like that. I mean, Christian Northrup speaks a lot about this, that, you know, we go in there and we start taking women's uteruses out and we start doing all kinds of surgery when, in fact, she said if you wait a month that it might be changing, and very often this is the body's way of healing. And what I've learned about leukemia is that from unresolved, you know, relationship issues that I've had throughout my life and abandonment issues and so on, that my body's way of healing from these psychological traumas that I've gone through in my own life could be this the presence of this leukemia. And if I treat it that way and don't treat it as something that's so terrible and so awful and it's just really my body going through what it has to go through, but as long as it hasn't reached a stage, you know, a stage where, say, where Anita was at, where you really need a spiritual intervention. And so that's, you know, what I have learned about all of this and the way I treat this leukemia is that there's something in this for me, just like Anita going through her near-death experience. For me, this was going through a near-death experience because leukemia is very often a fatal kind of diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I've decided that there was something in this for me to learn. And as a result of letting go of all of my fear and having it replaced with love, I encountered this man, this beautiful soul named John of God, mm-hmm. who did this healing. I encountered Mira Kelly, who brought me Anita Moorjani, and I had this past life regression. I had almost like a perfect storm of things all happened for me. The leukemia seems to be gone. I no longer go and check my numbers and find out. I go on the basis of how I feel. I feel stronger, I feel healthier, I feel better. I'm helping people to overcome their own fears. And that fear that was taken away by my remote surgery from John of God down in Brazil was replaced with love. And I have felt such a deep and profound sense of unconditional love in my life towards everything and everyone. I've even got, Lisa, you'll love this, I even put after last week's debacle with Rush Limbaugh. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yes, yes.
And what he said about the woman who was a slut, who was, and so
yes,
on.
Yes,
and,
yes, yes, yes.
I put, believe it or not, I learned this from Ram Dass, who had George W. Bush's picture on his puja table and Caspar Weinberger's picture back in Vietnam. I put Rush Limbaugh's picture. I cut it out of the paper and I put it right into my sacred space so that I could learn to have love every place, even with the people I disagree with and have some fear about.
Amazing. Interesting. Yeah. That's a very, very good. Do you remember the last time you were on and you had the watch stop after?
I did.
Did it ever happen? Did it ever restart again?
No, but you know what? Those entities that were in there. No, I lost two watches. And they were very, very expensive watches. Both of them were just destroyed. They was no longer good. I had them sent back. They said, we've never seen anything like this. It was a Panerai, very expensive watch that my daughter had convinced me to get, you know, during the what they call the suture removal phase of this healing thing. But two nights ago, I lost another hour on an alarm clock, on an electric alarm clock, and I've been just so mystified by it. It's never ever gained or lost anything. It's an electric clock. And it lost an hour during the night, and I didn't touch a button. There's no possibility.
These are the parallel universes at work. There is no time.
The entities are still there. I still feel them. We don't have time to go through all of the details of that, but when I came out of that healing, that they did remotely with these entities.
Wow.
Leukemia. I had these scrape marks on my right eye. I had them. I still get them about once every 2 weeks or so. I come out in the morning and my eye looks like it's all been scraped. I feel that they're still there with me, still teaching me, because I had a lot of judgment around this Rush Limbaugh story in this last week.
Yes.
And, so on, and him, and just doing name calling on that. It was just so filled with rage and anger towards anybody going out on the air and talking. And saying such pejorative, ugly things about a human being. You can differ with people, but you don't have to, you know, try to turn them into sluts and prostitutes because you don't agree with them. And he ultimately apologized because his ratings were going down and
right.
And his sponsors were pulling out. That's it, basically. But regardless of that, my job, and I know that's why the entities came back. It was like I had hate and anger and stuff inside of me. Towards this, and it was like, you've got to show love everywhere. You've got to be 100% in what Anita calls unconditional love like you've never seen it before. Isn't that right, Anita? I mean, it's like a kind of love that doesn't allow for any hate or any anger anyplace.
You see, now that's where you were just explaining that the leukemia would only come back if you forget that or fall off that path, because that's what feeds those cells,
The same is true of cancer. Anita and I have talked about this. It's hard to say that because so many people feel that they cause their own cancer. But the fact is that fear is, we live in a world that is afraid of cancer. We have more people, and it's a big money-making thing. We have more people who make a living off of cancer than who have cancer.
I do have to tell you that in Wayne's book, and I just want to hear about it, but in the Wishes Fulfilled book, you have to get the book because the section in the middle with the orbs, Wayne, is amazing. What were you going to say, Anita? I'm sorry, about the cancer and the fear around that?
Yeah, I was just going to say that the fear of cancer is actually bigger than the cancer itself. And many people, feel that the cancer nearly killed me. I always say that, no, the cancer saved my life because I wasn't who I was meant to be before I had the cancer. The cancer actually saved my life.
So if I were to say, well, as I had said at the beginning of the show, my husband's grandmother died of this. Every time I validate, when I say something like that, am I spreading the fear? Is that what that does?
Can I ask you again, when you tell people that your husband's grandmother died of...
Well, does it revalidate it every time you talk about the fear of something? Is where you put your attention is basically where I'm going with this. If you put
the whole thing about Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Anita, you spoke about that in your interview from London.
Mm.
Yes, exactly. The thing is, we really have to make a major paradigm shift in the way we look at cancer in the first place. So right now... even the way we address cancer, all of us, it comes from the way we've been socialized to view cancer. Cancer is exactly as Wayne said, it's your body forming a scab or something. It's trying to heal you. It's trying to tell you something, that there's something deeper going on. But instead of looking at what's deeper that's going on, our reflex reaction is to just treat the symptoms, and that's what the entire medical industry does. Everything it develops, everything in the way of technology to treat cancer and drugs to treat cancer, actually doesn't treat cancer. It treats the symptoms. Nobody really looks into what really causes cancer.
Mm.
And I believe that it's our pathological fears that cause cancer. It's when fears get really deep and ingrained into our psyche, it actually affects our cellular growth and it affects us on our cellular level. And we have become a culture that is pathologically fearful. We fear everything.
Well, Lisa, that putting pictures on cigarette packages about, warning people about cancer and telling them that they're going to die of cancer promotes more cancer. It doesn't do anything to eliminate it.
It's
just people.
Yeah, and early detection as well. It doesn't eliminate cancer. It just makes us more fearful of cancer, and it doesn't even give our bodies an opportunity to correct itself because we start treating it, and then we've embedded the fear in our mind already that we've got
cancer. It's like cutting that scab away on your arm and cutting the red marks away and cutting the pus away and all of that, instead of looking at it and say, well, that's how the body heals a cut. you know, and cancer might be the way, you know, especially in the earlier stages of it, cancer might be the way that the body is, which is this perfect creation, is designed to heal it rather than to have it, you know, just cut away and, you know.
Exactly. It's interesting because that's the way that we've raised our daughter, as you know, Wayne, is that we've raised her without fear, within
right.
the sense of keeping her safe. She understands boundaries and safety and so forth, but the we've raised her with understanding she can heal her body, and she has little cuts and heals them within hours, and we've raised her to understand not to focus on the things that can go wrong, but to focus on what can go right.
And she's a magical child, that girl. She's a magical child. I know. I did a cruise with her.
Yeah.
I've never been around a little girl who had just more magic to her. Such an aura.
Of,
a loving, peaceful, beautiful aura about her.
She misses you. Yes. She's still drawing those blue butterflies.
Yes.
So I want to say that I'm just so grateful and so blessed. My guests are Anita Morjani and Wayne Dyer, and we've talked about everything from near-death experiences to parallel universes to the fact that we are God and past life regression. I mean, this is such a beautiful conversation to have in the middle of a Los Angeles radio station in the middle of the day. This is so awesome that we get this opportunity. What I want to do is just give people we have about 5 or 6 minutes left. How can they use this information we're talking about here to apply to practical things in life? So the job that they want, or the getting pregnant, or you know, or healing their bodies. I mean, these practical, more it seems seemingly mundane when you're talking against healing cancer and so forth. But there are people that are wanting to create certain things in your life. How can they use this conversation in a practical sense?
Well, let me respond to this, and then Anita. It's the most important. I'm studying something now called the Ascended Master Instruction, which is based on the teachings of Saint Germain, and I've been studying it every single day, a different discourse every day, and I'm going to be writing about something called Divine Love. And I think every page of this instruction, and I think I've been in Ascended Master training since I showed up on this planet, since I was a little boy in an orphanage. I really do. I have a very strong sense about that, about the Dharma that I have. And the basic learning that I have had about if you want to become an Ascended Master, if you want to become someone who has these kinds of opportunities to do the things that Anita is speaking about and that I'm speaking about here, is to look and examine who you really are. And to see that who you are has within you, what it is that makes you alive, what it is that allows you to be, is not this physical body that you're in. It's constantly changing. As Muktananda said, that is real, which never changes. So the changeless, deathless, birthless part of you is the I Am presence that is within you. And to be grateful for it, to celebrate it, to stay in a state of complete gratitude for it, to continuously say thank you, and go within and remind yourself that you are not this body, you're none of this stuff that you have, you're none of your accomplishments. Who you are is this infinite soul, this infinite spiritual being, having a temporary human experience, and trust in that and believe in that and know that from the deepest core of your being, and constantly say, thank you. Thank you for this I Am presence. It is what will allow me to create anything. And then remember the words of Jesus in the New Testament, with God, all things are possible. With love, God is love. So with love, all things are possible. Now, what does that leave out? What does all things are possible leave out? Those are the words of, you know, right from the New Testament. All things are possible. All things.
That is exactly the beauty that comes from your communication, Wayne, is that you're so inspirational. And that's one of the gifts that you've probably received before you came in here and through your Ascended Master training as well. Anita, can you tell us a little bit more, as I mentioned earlier, how people can use this in their practical life right now?
What I tell people, no matter what they're facing, even if it's an illness, is I tell them to get in touch with what they're feeling and ask themselves different questions. So in addition to everything that Wayne said, which is very powerful and inspirational, I tell people that just get in touch with your feelings and stop worrying about questions like what should I do and what is the right thing to do, or focusing on whatever is wrong with them. What I say is to ask questions like, who am I? So rather than what should I do, it's more about getting to know who you are. And this is regardless of whether it's something that's financial that you're fearing or health or whatever it is, or no matter how your life is or where you are today, it's about, and what do I feel? And not so much about what are my expectations and what will people think if I do this, but what do I feel? Is this what I want to do? So we tend to ask, when we look for a job, is that will this job pay the bills? Will people accept me more if I take this job? One of the last things we ask ourselves is, how will this job make me feel, or what do I feel like doing? We've forgotten how to live our lives out of passion, and that's what I tell people to do. Get in touch with your passion. When you feel full of passion for your life, when you feel like you want to wake up every morning because you enjoy your day, you love everything in it, everybody in it, and even what you love what you're doing, then we have a reason to live. Then we're much more likely to be happy, healthy, and prosperous.
Mm.
So the first thing is to get in touch with your feelings.
And find your joy.
And
to find your joy. Anita Morjani has been my guest, and the name of her book is called Dying to Be Me, My Journey from Cancer to Near Death to True Healing. And that's the ultimate state, is that place to go forth and then heal other people in the process of healing yourself. So thank you so much, Anita. You are both, and Wayne Dyer, both so just amazing and inspirational and beautiful souls, and I'm so grateful to both of you. Thank you so much for being here with me this afternoon, and in my heart, I appreciate you.
Thank you, Lisa. God bless you, sweetheart.
You too. Until next time, I invite you all to stay aware.